Senate Energy Telecommunications will come to order. Secretary, take roll.
Vice Chair Small.
Here.
Vice Chair McNally.
Here.
Senator Cuff.
Excused.
Senator Gauthier.
Here.
Senator Kerry.
Excused.
Senator Lynch.
He's on his way.
Okay. Senator Molnar.
Excused.
Senator Morajo.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Here.
Senator Regeer.
Here.
Senator Sweeney.
Here.
Senator Temple.
Yes.
Chairman Ankeny.
Here. Okay, same drill. Turn your cell phones off. You got to take a call. Take it outside. The other thing is next Tuesday we'll be doing some exec. Probably do executive on 448. $170, at least, but and we'll be hearing let's see, Senate Bill 379 and HJ 16 on Tuesday, but Tuesday there's a good chance that finance and claims will be meeting in this room, so energy will more than likely meet in 303, the old Supreme Court chambers. So as we get, I'll find out tomorrow for sure and let everybody know where we're going to meet. Those of us on finance and claims, we can show up, count as a quorum, and then go back into the meeting. So with that, is our sponsor ready with the bill? Does anybody know how long the House is?
The tour House Bill of Representatives, we've got a Senate bill right
here. Yep.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The House just adjourned.
Okay. Let's wait. We'll just take a little recess till the sponsor gets here, and we'll get his two bills out of the way and then finish up with a really good bill. Representative Skies.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Sorry, we had a little bit late floor session. We had a couple little things that needed to be discussed right after. I apologize.
Which one are you going to open with?
If you'd like, Mr. Chair, I'll just go in the order if you want to do 273 first.
Okay, you can open the hearing on House Bill 273.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Energy and Telecommunications Committee. My name is Derek Skies. That's S-K-E-E-S. It's my honor to represent House District 11 in the beautiful southwest corner of Flathead County. I bring to you an act repealing the law authorizing the people of the state of Montana through statewide veto to approve or reject a proposed nuclear power facility certified under the Montana Major Facility Siting Act. Members of the committee, I apologize. I'm out of breath and running around. We had a late floor session. The last thing I want to do is disrespect this committee. There's a lot of things to be said about this bill, but I would prefer to do it in my clothes. So with that, I'll jump into proponents and opponents. Thank you, sir.
Are there proponents? Proponents for 273?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lori Shaw. That's S-H-A-W for the record. I'm here with Northwestern Energy in support of House Bill 273. While I am by no means an expert on nuclear technology, I do know that the current technology of today, the new technology, is far superior than the technology of 40, 30, or even 20 years ago. Northwestern's capacity issues are a big problem that many of you have heard about quite a few times this session already. We believe that nuclear energy could potentially be part of the solution for filling our need for baseload reliable energy in the future at some point. So that is why we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Chairman, committee members. Dwight Rose, R-O-S-E, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 44. We stand in favor of House Bill 273. This kind of goes hand in hand with Senate Joint Resolution 3. This is to us, this is a good bill because it's another alternative for producing baseload generation for here in the state of Montana, with the possibility that Coal Strip 3 and 4 is going to, at some point, become obsolete. This is new technology, as previous speaker alluded to. This is new technology. This is not Three Mile Island. This is not the China Syndrome. In the presentation that the good senator gave, this is good, clean technology that could be viable for the state of Montana for Coal Strip, and we urge you to pass on 273. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents? Are there proponents on Zoom? Oh, wait. I got one. Just a minute. I got a live one.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jackie McBroom. That's M-C-B-R-O-O-M. I am the business manager for IBEW Local 233, and I think I speak for a lot of the industry when I say that this is a wonderful bill. It'd be great for Coal Strip, great for anywhere in the state, actually, and we would hope that you would support it. And I will agree with Senator Skies when he gets up. We think it's a fine bill, and thank you for carrying it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents?
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Stacy Yates, Y-A-T-E-S. I'm business manager of Local 1638 in Coal Strip, Montana, and I think this is a great bill for the community of Coal Strip. And I'm here to support this bill. Thank you.
Didn't even recognize you.
I'm looking good, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. Further proponents? Are there proponents online?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to remind those on Zoom to raise their hand if they would like to testify. For proponents on Bill 273.
Seeing none, we'll go to the opponents.
Mr. Chairman and committee, try this way. I'm kind of tall. My name is Carol Mackin, M-A-C-K-I-N, and I'm from Helena, Montana. I'm hoping that by now the committee members have seen quite a long list from the sponsor of Initiative 80 of people who worked with him to pass the initiative. And many of them endorsed it publicly. Mike Mayles was his name, in case you weren't sure of that. I wanted to add a few more to the list. The first one is Republican Jim Waltermeyer. He was among the first Republicans to speak for passage of I-80, although there were many Republicans who joined him. At the next election, he became Secretary of State. His support of I-80 certainly broadened the appeal, his appeal, amongst Democrats and may have helped him win. Libertarian Larry Dodge is the originator of the infamous voter survey. Representative Skies has made it this almost the centerpiece of the House Bill 273 debate. The most important survey questions for the committees to consider are that 92% agreed that the initiative and referendum process was important to the operation of a free society. That got the most support of any item on the survey. 83% said that when voting, they understood all or most of the ballot issues. Another individual who put his name in the ring was K. Ross Toole. Many of you may know him or who he was. He critiqued the legislature. He liked to do that. And explained why opponents of initiatives, even while spending millions, could not defeat a popular initiative. He said, Montanans remain deeply suspicious of encroaching industrial conglomerates and big business lobbyists with unlimited financing. In point of fact, Montanans have not forgotten their history, not yet. And then we come to probably an even more well-known Montanan, and that's Mike Mansfield. He was probably I-80's most prominent supporter. Mike honed his skills in the Montana legislature, then applied them in leading the U.S. Senate for many years. Finally, he took on world issues as ambassador. But before leaving for Japan in 1978, he gave an AP interview in which Mike said he'd signed the I-80 petition in the spring and had just voted by absentee ballot for the passage of the initiative. And perhaps the most vocal person who supported I-80 was Congressman Max Baucus, who within days of the interview I will be describing, became U.S. Senator for the first time. He described to a reporter that I-80 was all about. Although Baucus supports Initiative 80, this is a reporter speaking, although Baucus supports Initiative 80, he doesn't oppose nuclear power. Initiative 80 would provide for a statewide vote on the proposed nuclear plants in Montana and enact stiff standards for any developers to meet. This is Baucus' statement. I don't think it's a ban, it's a safeguard. For all the reasons given by these prominent Montanans, I ask the committee to table House Bill 273. Remember the voters who elected you. Doesn't that prove that they show good judgment when voting? Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitner Chase, spelled C-H-A-S-E. I'm with the Montana Conservation Voters, or MCV for short. For the record, we don't oppose nuclear energy. We oppose the approach that this bill is taking. There's not a ban on nuclear energy in Montana. Right now, voters must approve any new nuclear projects, and this bill would, as you all know, take away that requirement. Now, there's another bill that we do support fully, Senate Joint Resolution 3, which is sponsored by the fine senator right here. And that bill is a study bill that would answer some really important questions for this body to report back to the voters when they do get around, hopefully, to talking about one of these projects more seriously. So the Senate Joint Resolution 3 would answer whether we voters want nuclear here, where they would want their waste, and whether it's economically feasible to bring this power source to the state. So essentially, we think that House Bill 273 is putting the cart before the horse, if that makes sense. And so what we want to see ideally is SJ3 kind of leading the way. And if it makes sense to do so, then address the question that's being posed by 273 in a future session, rather than having Representative Skies kind of drag it alongside. So we appreciate what the sponsor's trying to do here. We think that maybe just needs a little more time. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Bill Myers from Big Fork, M-Y-E-R-S. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I represent myself, not my businesses today. As many of you know, I'm not an RRD, kind of a constitutional conservative, and that's why I'm here objecting to this bill, because I think that HB 273 takes away people's rights to vote. People approve that, obviously, but this is energy, so let me make a couple of comments that are relevant to the energy subject. Two that I'll pick out, Yellowstone and earthquake fault lines. Everybody, I'm sure, in this room is familiar that Yellowstone is not a volcano or a supervolcano. The geologists call it a super caldera. It's in its own category of nasty, the nastiest thing on the earth. We know it creates rock slides, lakes, buries towns. We have yet to see what it could do in the future. Also, earthquake fault lines. We all know that we're in a state with a lot of mountains, tectonic plates, and even in Big Fork, where I live, we have earthquakes regularly, including some that are a result of offshoots of Yellowstone.
Stay on the bill.
Okay. Therefore, I do support Senator Gauthier's SJ3 study bill. But today I focus on page 21, lines 10 to 13 of this bill, taking away citizens' right to vote. I've lived in Montana over 40 years. But in 1978, I was not yet full-time, but I still remember the discussions going on at that time in bars, restaurants, and other places. It was quite a debate. I moved here shortly thereafter. I think it's important to know that people chose to control their own destiny on this subject. And I think it's important also that this be honored because the vote be honored because this is what our founding fathers talked about. And so sometimes I quote from the Bible today, not, but from the little book here that we all cherish of our Declaration and Constitution, one that's off the top of my head that we all know very well from 1775 from the Boston Tea Party, no taxation without representation. Our founders wanted participation. In the Declaration, it's very clear in the opening that the founders talked about the will of the people being given by God, the Creator, and respecting that the government derived its authority from the people. And, of course, the three famous words from the beginning of the Constitution, we the people. So I think it's very important to respect that the will of the people was voted on already in 1978. For the government to believe it can ignore and overturn the will of the people in my opinion, is bass-ackwards and inconsistent with the founding principles the people have died for 250 years. So I'm advocating for consistency for both constitutions of the United States and the state of Montana. Our state constitution provides for legislative initiatives, voter initiatives, and constitutional initiatives. We all know we are not in a democracy to vote on everything, but we do encourage participation in these and other direct vote issues such as bonds, levies, and taxes. So we need to be consistent in regards to allowing people to vote on critical policy issues such as siting of a nuclear power plant in our state, especially when the people have specifically called for that right. To ignore that right is inconsistent with our founders and is inconsistent with our advocacy that, in fact, I support on other CI initiatives, one that's coming before you shortly on the floor. I conclude by asking, if Bill Gates wants small nuclear plants, let him install the first one on Lake Washington at his compound below his 30,000-square-foot mansion. Or if the representative Skies would like to have this in Kalispell, let's ask the neighbors there in Kalispell near his house. What do you think they'd say? I doubt very much that people would want this nuclear plant there. So I ask you the question, is it fair for someone in Flathead to say locate in Carter County, way off in southeast Montana, or Rosebud County, without voters of and nearby property owners' approval, to dump in someone else's backyard something that people may not want, is not respectful or protecting of their health, safety, or private property rights. So let's be consistent. Whether an RRD, please support the will of the people to participate and vote on this and other controversial issues. Thank you for attention to my comments.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, I have testimony. May I distribute that?
Pardon me?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mackin, M-A-C-K-I-N. I was a volunteer on Initiative 80 at a number of levels. That was back in the 70s and early 80s. I was also on the Common Cause Northwest Energy Task Force at that time. And at that time, conservation, solar, and wind were dismissed as impractical, and coal was considered better than nuclear. So now things appear to have changed, and it's time for reconsideration. And consistent with questioning my own biases, I went ahead and did some research to figure out if we do need to set I-80 aside and allow the regular operation of state government. Any scale of nuclear reactor operation commits Montana to a radioactive fuel and waste disposal cycle that lasts thousands of years after decommissioning the reactor. Radiation makes everything else radioactive, and that's the fundamental problem. It creates heat, but it's also toxic and hazardous. Everything has to be disposed of. Gloves, equipment, spent fuel, and the reactor facility itself finally has to be decommissioned and entombed, and a whole lot of these activities have to be done behind shielding, and that shielding itself becomes radioactive, and that has to go in the hole or wherever with it. Nuclear plants have momentous, irreversible consequences. Once you start, you can't go back. It's not like a gas plant converting coal to gas and the gas doesn't work. Okay, we'll put it in the hole and we walk away. That's not how it works with nukes. You are on the hook for hundreds and possibly thousands of years. A 10,000-year commitment and the expenses and risks that go with it justify both a public debate and a vote on whether to go ahead with that. I-80, when it was written and as encoded, states the reasons for the measure. And all the reasons in the preamble appear to me to still be relevant. I did my research, and focusing somewhat on the NuScale reactors that were are going to be put into Idaho Falls. Those are items 4, 5, 6, 7 in my testimony. You can go ahead and check those out at the, and I've got the justification for those statements in my footnotes, which are available by on the internet. All of the reasons in the preamble are still relevant. I-80 built-in protection for the public, particularly a bonding requirement and liability for operators. Repealing I-80 leaves Montana exposed not just to the small nuclear reactors that are being talked about, but also to the big 1,000 or multi-1,000 watt nuclear reactors. Once you take the both protections away, it's Katie bar the door. All of them can come in. Federal requirements protect the operator, not the public. That's why we took time to write in specific requirements for liability to make sure that the operators had an ongoing liability to the public for making mistakes. We put in bonding so that there was satisfactory bonding to cover ahead of time the costs at the rear end. So this was not a haphazard process. It took years, and actually it was the second initiative of two. Then the second one, with the vote added, was the one that went over with the public. I urge you to read through Mr. Romanas' review for small and advanced nuclear reactors. It's arranged topically, so you can go from here to there with cost or safety, and I think it's going to be enlightening. I had to conclude as a result that nuclear power is coming in or offered in a lot more variations and different types, but the basic problems that radioactivity creates are still there. And they haven't really been surmounted in terms of giving us electricity that's too cheap to meter. It's expensive. And it takes a long time to put a plant into operation. This prototype plant that's going in Idaho Falls, I expect it will go in because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at it, is different, but it has its own set of problems, as Mr. Romana talks about. And I don't think that labor will be too pleased when they read what the actual job picture is from this kind of technology or this kind of modular development of the technology. Moving toward conclusion, in the 90s, this legislature deliberated electricity deregulation, and this is at paragraph 10, and brought forth a disaster. My Touch America stock became worthless. Montana's low-priced electricity went from low to high. Our aluminum plants closed down. I don't think part-time citizen legislators did take time to really deliberate and dig into the details. They acted on the basis of self-interest and ideology and wishful thinking, and they made a rash decision. That rash decision could be fixed by re-regulating in the course of two or three sessions after that. You don't have that option with nuclear technology. Once you're in for hundreds or thousands of years, and you're going to have to live with that and deal with that. In 1980, Montana passed I-84, where they refused to accept out-of-state radioactive waste. Of course, we have to accept our own. South Dakota recently backed out of a Trump administration effort to create a disposal method using oil drilling technology. If you can't get a red state like South Dakota to go for it in an administration like the Trump administration, who's going to go for it? I think that the public is going to be really resistant, especially when they start thinking about the nuclear waste disposal aspect of this. Nevada hasn't yet been willing to accept the Yucca Flats facility. Nobody wants this stuff. Conservation, solar, and wind have always been safe. New battery technology is solving the power storage issue, and that might be an opportunity for Colstrip. The safeguards of I-80 are still relevant and necessary because nukes of all sizes and configurations still have all the problems that I-80 was enacted to deal with. And that's why I ask you to vote no on House Bill 273.
Thank you. Further opponents? Further opponents? Are there opponents online?
Mr. Chair, the first one is Gary Madison.
Gary?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little bit slow to unmute. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Gary Matson, spelled M-A-T-S-O-N, a 54-year resident of Milltown, Montana, and a retired small businessman. I have had a strong interest in Montana energy matters since the 1970s. I oppose HB 273 because it weakens a critical decision-making process. Decisions that potentially have strong and lasting effects upon all Montanans should be thoroughly explored by broad-based public discussions, such as those that would accompany a statewide vote. Technologies as complex as nuclear electricity generation will never have adequate expertise in any state agency that will enable full evaluation of risks and benefits. The fewer the persons involved in public decisions, the more vulnerable these decisions are to special interests, which would benefit at the expense of Montanans. The broad public discussion that would precede a statewide vote is essential to ensure that a nuclear facility would be an asset for our state and not a liability. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chair, we have Madison Hebner.
Madison.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Ankeny and members of the committee. My name is Madison Hebner, H-E-B as in boy, N-E-R, from Bozeman, Montana. And I'm here today on behalf of Ford, Montana, in opposition to House Bill 273. By repealing a longstanding initiative that we've discussed already today that was voted on by the citizens of Montana, the people's right to weigh in on nuclear is subsequently removed. We know there's still a lot to learn about nuclear energy, and it is vital for the public to have a say in this process. We do not support the undemocratic nature of removing Montanans' ability to weigh in on proposed nuclear energy facility plans in our state, and we ask that you oppose House Bill 273. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, we have Mike Malls.
Mike?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the opportunity to comment. My name is Mike Males, M-A-L-E-S, and I was one of the directors of Nuclear Vote, which sponsored the Initiative 80 in 1978. And I have been a little surprised to hear claims that the public did not know what it was voting on when it approved Initiative 80 by a 65% margin, despite a record-setting spending campaign against it by the industry, record-setting up to that point in the state's history. Initiative 80 was heavily debated, as an earlier speaker pointed out. It was endorsed by Montana's entire Senate, U.S. Senate, delegation, including Senator John Melcher, as mentioned, former Senator Mike Mansfield, both the Republican and Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate that year, Max Baucus and Larry Williams, and really had widespread endorsements from a lot of people who understood exactly what the initiative did and lent their support to it anyway. I would just like to make a couple of brief points here that have not been covered, at least I haven't heard them covered. First of all, Initiative 80 only applies to nuclear facilities of 50 megawatts or larger. 50 megawatts is sufficient to power 25,000 homes. So we're not talking about small-scale facilities here at all. None of these would even be covered by the initiative. It would not apply to them. And if anyone is anticipating building a plant larger than that, then I think that we need to be somewhat disturbed by the efforts to repeal the nuclear safety and liability standards, not just the popular vote standard, but the nuclear safety and liability standards Initiative 80 contains. And I would urge members of the committee to read these standards and see what they find unreasonable about them and why they should be repealed outright. If these small modular reactors that are being proposed really are new technology and they meet higher safety standards, then they should easily be able to meet the standards of Initiative 80, which were taken from the nuclear industry's own standards itself. All we did was say, if you can meet these standards, you can proceed to certify a nuclear power plant in Montana. In particular, we were concerned that the Price-Anderson Act, a federal preemptive act, would limit the liability of Montanans to receive compensation in the case of a nuclear accident. It would limit, put a ceiling on what the industry would have to pay or the operators of the plant. And again, it's very curious that if this is a new technology that is safe, then why can it not meet the standards of every other industry and individual in Montana and accept full liability for any accidents that might occur, as well as to provide funding for decommissioning plants to assure us the methods of waste disposal and so forth. So again, I urge the committee members to read these particular standards. This new technology is not being greeted in other areas. I would be glad to send anyone who is interested a link to a Science Magazine article, very recent one, November 20th, 2020, on a Utah project to build 12 of these small modular reactors. The cost of this project has soared from $4.2 billion to $6.1 billion. Eight of the 36 utilities participating have withdrawn, and the project has been delayed for 3 years, while other utilities anticipate pulling out of the project. These plants have not proven to be nearly as promising as proponents indicate. And I would urge really extreme caution, especially in a state of Montana, which has 1 million people, and taking on this scale of potential liability, long-term costs and risks. Again, I urge your no vote on House Bill 273. And Mr. Chairman, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, I have Jan Strout.
Jan?
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jan Strout, spelled S-T-R-O-U-T, and I'm speaking for myself. On behalf of the thousands of voters, however, in 1978, who voted to adopt Initiative 80, I stand in opposition of HB 273, which calls for eliminating restrictions on nuclear facility development. Mike Mails, as always, has described that very well. I wish to speak about how well I know the intentions and principles of Initiative 80, because I was one of the volunteer campaign directors coordinating Nuclear Vote in Bozeman and Southwest Montana that contributed to its successful passage by two-thirds of Montana voters in 1978. As a young woman in my 20s, contributing to I-80 was an incredible lesson in the promise of participatory democracy. In addition to the magical thinking of the HB 273 supporters that somehow missed the news of Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, more recently Fukushima, and the many other nuclear health and environmental disasters since then, Other wishful thinking by HB 273 supporters is their disavowal of we 1978 voters who somehow didn't know what we were voting for. Because I was there as a volunteer in 1978, I spoke to thousands of diverse people across Montana, going door to door, writing letters to the editor, tabling, presenting to groups of Montana voters, large and small, and witnessing the standing room only auditorium debate on adopting I-80 held on the MSU campus, featuring representatives of our I-80 proponents versus those employed by the nuclear industry. In addition, a number of major Montana daily newspapers endorsed our initiative, not only for the scientific evidence threshold required to be met to safely construct this form of energy you have heard about. Equally important, they recognized I-80 ensured Montana voters retained the power to make final decisions about our energy, health, and environmental future. Our right to vote is fundamental to a democracy. You've heard that already. That's why initiatives, referenda, and other ways to create laws and policies are so popular in Montana. It's why I had my students at MSU vote on their critical thinking, community engagement projects each semester, so they took them seriously and had ownership of their decisions. So why would anyone elected by popular vote to represent the people of Montana not want to defend this precious right, but even worse, destroy it through passage of HB 273? I hope you can answer this. I also understand the jobs versus environment issue that is still before us as it was in 1978. However, in 2021, we have opportunities to create Green New Deal for Montana, appropriate technology, and highly paid union jobs. I have been a union organizer. I think every job should be a union job, while investing in expanded, renewable, sustainable, and predictable energy sources. Today, thanks to scientific progress, we have the opportunity to have good-paying union jobs and a clean, healthy environment. So let's not go back. We, the two-thirds of knowledgeable Montana voters in 1978, have trusted in our democracy and that our votes would still continue to count. I urge a do-not-pass of HB 273 in the name of our democracy and we, the Montana people. Thank you so much for letting me speak to you today.
Thank you. Are there further opponents?
Mr. Chair, I have Carmen Borchelt.
Hello, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Carmen Borchelt. That is B-O-R-C-H-E-L-T. Here on behalf of Montana Audubon, and we would like to be on the record for opposition of House Bill 273. Now, in 1978, 65% of Montanans voted in support of I-80. This was before Chernobyl happened, just 1 year later. Now, regardless of how much nuclear technology has progressed in the last 40 years, science still has not found a cure for the dangers associated with nuclear radiation. And something that has not been mentioned yet, and I would like you all to take into consideration, is that nuclear generating facilities are sited on large bodies of water for the cooling purposes. So say, for instance, Flathead Lake, Ennis Lake, Fort Peck, just to name a few. Now, think about the ecological impact that this could potentially have in these areas, as well as the economic impact that could have in these areas. There's no guarantee that the storage locations to contain the waste for thousands of years will hold. And so Montana voters have a right and should have a right to vote if they want a nuclear facility within their own community. So when voting on this bill, please think about once again the ecological and economic impact this bill could have. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, I have Connor Plover.
Connor.
Good afternoon, Chairman Ankeny, members of this committee. My name is Connor Plover. That's spelled P as in Paul, L-O-E-G-E-R. And I am here on behalf of the Montana Environmental Information Center. MAIC strongly opposes House Bill 273 because many in the 70s worked hard for their right to vote for the siting of any new nuclear facility, and this legislative body must take care to fight to protect and preserve that right to democratically determine whether or not Montana should pursue nuclear energy. We have already heard that I-80 was a popular initiative that passed with two-thirds of the vote, and it remained a popular initiative from the numbers that Carol Mackin introduced. The voters knew what they were voting for, and they were proud of what they voted for. But you must also take note of what Mike Mayles also mentioned. This bill would eliminate many of the safeguards that were initiated because of I-80. Therefore, this body must take care to ensure that those safeguards remain in place. But also, this committee must make sure not to put the cart before the horse. SJ3 would allow for this legislative body to determine how to pursue nuclear energy and whether or not it is the best option for Montana. There are numerous reasons for that, and there are still questions regarding the small modular reactors that have been discussed today, primarily issues with the waste stream and storage. There are still questions regarding how to adequately store this nuclear waste should it be used in Montana. But also there are still questions regarding the costs of small modular reactors. Recently in Utah, in which NuScale partnered with a Utah power plant in order to build 12 modular reactors within the state, 8 partners backed out of that investment because they realized that the plant would cost $2 billion more than they realized. Therefore, we urge this committee to not pass House Bill 273. But I leave you with this final note. If you remain unconvinced that the public is unable to determine whether or not we should pursue nuclear energy, just look at this hearing. We have had a healthy debate regarding whether or not nuclear energy is the right path for Montana, and the public is well equipped to have this debate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any further opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair, we have Rebecca Harbosh.
Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Harbage. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, A-G-E. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. DEQ is responsible for the environmental regulations impacted by House Bill 273, which include the Major Facility Siting Act. I'm available for any questions committee have any. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other informational witnesses? Any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Kerry.
Mr. Chair, a couple questions for Mr. Mackin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kerry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mackin, on your ninth point, you refer to South Dakota recently backed out of a Trump administration effort to create a disposal method using oil drilling technology. And your footnote refers to a 2016 article on Rugby, North Dakota. Could you explain that to me?
Let's see. I got the state right. Wrong, Your Honor, Sorry, I'm in court occasionally. I made a mistake in transcribing. I apologize for the mistake.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mackin, was it North Dakota or was it South Dakota?
I would go with the written, the source, Senator Kerry. I'm pretty sure it's North Dakota if that's where the news article says it was. I just made a mistake.
Okay, thank you. Further questions for you, Mr. Mackin. Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
What is your knowledge on these small nuclear reactors?
My knowledge of these small nuclear reactors is what I have picked up from listening to the House proceedings, the House testimony, and then going out to the internet and searching for information on small nuclear reactors on, like, Wikipedia, and specifically searching the NuScale small reactor website, that sort of thing. I spent 6-7 hours.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like you've done some research on it. Could you describe to me how much nuclear waste is comes from these small nuclear reactors, and how will that be handled? You should have come across that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kerry, I'm not a nuclear engineer, and I haven't delved into the numbers. But I'm pretty sure that the disposal techniques are going to be the same. If you've got a 1,000-watt total small nuclear reactors that are fueled with uranium fuel pellets, there, and that's the same stuff you're using in the 1,000-watt reactors, then you're going to end up with the same kind of fuel disposal problem.
With your assumption, you would, Mr. Chair, with your assumption, Mr. Mack, and you probably would be correct. However, that's not the new technology. The new technology is recycling of the nuclear waste and putting it back to use. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Carol Mackin. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Mackin, about 2.5 years ago, people of Montana in the initiative process voted against Medicaid expansion, and then last session the legislature expanded Medicaid. Were you testifying against Medicaid expansion too?
I wasn't testifying at all about Medicaid expansion, no.
Follow-up? Mr. Chairman, Ms. Mackin, but I guess I'm trying to find out your opposition. Is it to nuclear power or the fact that the legislature might undo the initiative process?
The fact that the legislature might undo the initiative process.
Follow-up? Mr. Chairman, Ms. Mackin, then why didn't you testify last session against Medicaid expansion?
Careful.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Senator Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have questions for Mr. Mackin.
I'm always forgetting to.
Mr. Chairman.
Are you aware of the amount of water that a small modular reactor would use for ongoing operations?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gauthier, I am not. I thought about that. I wanted. I think water usage was a concern with larger reactors when we were studying I-80. Not that it uses a huge amount of water, but that it heats it so that when it's put back into a stream or a lake, that changes the ecology of the stream or a lake. It can't support the same kind of life. There is a concern with Colstrip as to whether or not water supplies would be adequate. I'm not sure whether or not they would be equivalent to the current coal generation water supply usage or not. I don't know if I'm answering your question. Should I have just said no?
No. Well, I'd like to answer the question for you. The small modular reactors, once they have their water within the facility, it's a recycled water. They never really need any more. They recycle the same water within the plant over and over and over. Very minuscule amount of water is used in these small modular reactors. That's one of the very positive things of it. There's no big water supply required other than initial fill of the tank. So those are just some of the really good things about that. Is it does use very, very minimal amount of water. So just inform you on that. That's all I got. I have one more question, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, follow up.
This one here is for Rebecca Harbage. Yes, Mrs. Harbage, I know on this particular bill we're talking about removing the Major Facility Siting Act, but does that take away all the requirements from the DEQ for a project for a small modular reactor? Would there still be requirements from the DEQ?
Thank you, Senator. And Senator, Mr. Chair, review by DEQ will still be required, even absent review under the Major Facility Siting Act. There may be other permitting actions required. These could include permits for things such as stormwater prevention plans, stormwater discharges associated with construction activity of the facility, easements to cross state highways or DNRC lands, air quality, short-term turbidity for crossing streams. These are just a few of the examples that would provide some environmental protections. Some of these permits would also require review under the Montana Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
So, Mrs. Harbage, so you're basically saying that this particular facility, when it does go under review, will have a thorough inspection from the DEQ?
Senator Gauthier and Mr. Chair, we believe that there will be environmental review from DEQ of any proposed nuclear facility. Where a DEQ has some concern is that we have not had a chance to review an application for a nuclear facility to date. So we are not sure whether the review under the Major Facility Siting Act would be redundant or not, or whether other permits would provide the appropriate protection and public participation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Mr. Chair, a quick question for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative, welcome to the Senate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, thank you, sir. Good to see you again.
You too. I thought I'd give you a... This doesn't feel to me to be a bill. It is about technology, but it's really about process. And so I thought I'm probably going to break into your clothes. But let's go there. Could you describe for us, because I couldn't put a sentence together on this, as to how you view, and I think it's clear from the bill, but how you view the relationship between the legislature and the referendum process in the state of Montana. We have another referendum, which we don't want to talk about right now, but it's current, and we're creating laws around it and rules around it. There's a big conversation in this state about, you know, what does a referendum mean? And this one's old. I recognize it's 1978, but I'll be quiet here just to give you an opportunity to speak to the obvious question of, does this legislature have the right to change the terms and conditions of a referendum voted by the people?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator. Excellent question. And my short answer is yes. You nailed it. This was two generations ago, 48 years ago. And they may well have been right to block it if you look at the events that happened after it. Fukushima, what was mentioned, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, oh my gosh. So maybe all those lists of folks that were awesome advocates of this in 78, they may have been right on the money. But after 48 years, and the good senator here just nailed it, it's about the technology of today. And so with that argument, then you could easily argue that if we can't overturn the process, then why did we do the 72 convention? What did we just do to the folks in 1889 that created this state? We just told them, hey, we don't care what you think. We're going to rewrite the Constitution.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I would argue that maybe there's another path, which would be to have a referendum to undo the referendum. Let the people decide. I mean, it puts us in an interesting and, for me personally, an awkward spot. And I don't want to, you know, frankly, if we weren't talking about nuclear power, I'd be happy, because that's for another day, and we will have a chance to talk about that too. I just want to try and refocus this conversation on the constitutional question, which I think is an open question for me, and I'm going to learn here. When the people speak, to what degree do we in the legislature, you know, have the ability to override the voice of the people, even if it's 20 or 40 years ago and with all the arguments as to why and all that? Okay, fine. But I actually think constitutionally, I mean, our Constitution goes back further than 1978. So, you know, I think that's what this committee needs to know as to how, with your instruction, how would our role be to approve this bill and override the voice of the people? And we're going to need a certain amount of comfort that that's the right path. And I'm personally not there yet, but I'm interested in your sense of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator. That's an excellent question. And you put it in the perfect way to describe it. One, we could look at, we're three co-equal branches of government. The Supreme Court overturns citizens' initiatives all day long. They've done it a bunch. We take citizens' initiatives that come that are poorly written and we modify them, put the sideboards on them that were missed. We did that with medicinal marijuana, and we're going to have to do that with recreational marijuana. So we're not overturning them, but we're modifying them. So we have already established that we have that. And then the whole discussion that brought Mr. and Mrs. Mackin in here was what caused the genesis of this bill. When I was a freshman, on February 4th in 2011, a good representative, Joanne Blyton, brought House Bill 310. And that bill was basically, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to describe quickly why we need to do this. And that bill was basically a yes vote on a ballot initiative is a yes, and a no vote is a no. Great bill, great idea. Well, Ms. Mackin came in, and I've got the audio of both of her testimonies on House and Senate, and I can provide that to the committee, but I've had it transcribed. And this is exactly what she said, and I'm going to go to the parts that are cogent here. She said they did a phone campaign, and I'll start quoting. So we decided to expend the funds on a random poll of the voters. We wanted to find out what had swayed their decision because it hadn't been money, because they were outspent. There was a David and Goliath campaign. We learned something completely unexpected. No matter if the voter favored or opposed nuclear power, they said that they were confused about the for and against statement. Many of them said that they weren't sure what they had voted the way that they had wanted to vote. They were very unhappy about that. She said that in the House. In the Senate on March 14th, in front of this very committee, or I'm sorry, against state administration in 2011, she said a similar exact thing, and I'll quote exactly the relevant, we learned something completely unexpected. No matter if the voter favored nuclear energy or opposed nuclear energy, they often said they were confused by the for and against statements. Many of them said they were not sure they had cast their vote in the way they had intended. So without those two statements, I would agree maybe we shouldn't overturn the citizens. But with the information provided to me back in 2011 about this process really made me think, well, wait a minute, why are we still doing it? Two generations ago, 48 years ago technology, and even the folks that brought it said it didn't do what they really wanted it to do.
Pardon me, thank you. Mr. Chair, may I have one more follow-up? It's actually a redirect, Mr. Chair.
Redirect?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I think it's fair just to ask the person who's just named to, if she wishes to, Ms. Macklin, to come up and, you know, we don't want to deep dive on this, ma'am, but I think it's fair to give you a chance to say your piece, and then we'll move on.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope, excuse me.
Yeah.
I think that was an accurate transcript that he gave you.
Okay.
And I think that what I was saying is that the voters wanted to do it right, and they worried about it. Even a given time later, they worried because they weren't sure they had done it right. But we did a bill, and Mr. Representative Skies helped do a bill which corrected that. And now we don't hear so much complaining about the ballot and how the Attorney General is writing some kind of thing that kind of sounds legal rather than down to earth.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator McNally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple, I think. I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Mayles, assuming he's still out there.
He's muted.
Is he? Oh, yeah, he is. Mr. Mayles?
Unmute yourself, Mr. Mayles.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Mills. So in terms of the initiative, I honestly was not aware that about all the standards that were part of that. And I was wondering if you could speak to some of those that would be wiped out by passing this bill.
Well, there were four standards, and I'm going to try to remember them. I'm sorry I don't have them right in front of me. One standard, and this is actually one I want to say up front, I think could be repealed. This one standard of these four that I think were included. That standard said that before being certified to build a nuclear power plant in Montana, the operator must show that safety systems have been tested and shown effective in actual operation. Since 1978, we have had several nuclear accidents that in which safety systems were tested in actual operation. They performed with various efficacies, some good, some bad, but anyway, they have been tested. So I think that one provision is probably out of date. A second provision would require a nuclear operator to accept full liability for all damage caused by any nuclear accident, radioactive waste, transport, any other thing, and for which they have cause. And this is consistent with Montana law, requiring every individual and industry in the state to accept full liability for the damage they cause. But the nuclear industry has been exempted by the federal Price-Anderson Act. So that act would have the operator would have to waive the protections of that act. And again, if these these new technologies are as safe as proponents say and as improved, then they should have no trouble accepting full liability. A third one required a plan to dispose of radioactive waste. And I would refer, again, members of the committee to an International Electrical Engineers article that does discuss small modular reactors and concludes that they really do have many of the same problems as the old reactors on a smaller scale, but they have many of the same problems and the same challenges. Again, if there is a viable plan to recycle or dispose of nuclear waste until it becomes harmless, they should have no trouble meeting that standard. And finally, they needed to submit a 30% bond equal to 30% of the cost of the facility for decommissioning. This is so they would not leave the state's taxpayers and government holding the bag by simply going bankrupt or abandoning the project at the end of its lifetime, as has been done in other places, unfortunately. And so this, again, if the technology is there, it's been improved, I don't see why these four standards would be difficult for anyone contemplating a small nuclear reactor to meet.
Okay,
I don't understand why the bill repeals those standards.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And so just to go to a point that was being discussed earlier, Mr. Mills, do you think that voters were confused about what they were voting about on I-80?
You know, I think it's a question every election, whether you're talking about ballot issues or candidates, whether or not voters always know what they're voting for. I think in this particular case, because of the high level of spending against this initiative, because the industry sent in a team of engineers to debate us, the proponents of Initiative 80, and we had vigorous and extensive debates in every major city of the state, because of the newspaper interest in it, because of the state leaders that endorsed it, who certainly did understand what the initiative did. I think that you can accept that this vote was as informed as any vote. I'm sorry to answer it that way, but I think it's as informed as any vote that the voters take. You'd have to reject almost all voter decisions if you reject the one they made on I-80, I would think.
Okay, and follow-up?
Follow-up.
Just to be clear, the I-80 does not prohibit the development of nuclear power. It just requires that be voted on by the population, correct?
Yes, it subjects nuclear facilities to the four safety and liability standards that I mentioned that are unique to nuclear power. They are not really, they don't really affect other forms of power, and that's why they were included. and the popular vote. Yes, it does not ban nuclear power, but it does subject it to those standards.
And one more follow-up for Mr. Mayles, Mr. Chair. What it did ban, if I understand you correctly, and I'm obviously not familiar enough with I-80, so I say that up front, but it did ban a reactor of 50 megawatts or higher. Is that correct?
Yes, those reactors under 50 megawatts would not be affected by Initiative 8.
Okay. Thank you. And I have a question for our information witness.
Redirect.
Ms. Hebner, I believe. I got that. No, I didn't get that right. Did I get that? Who's our information?
He was Harbage, I think.
Yes, Rebecca. Sorry. I'm not an information witness.
Ms. Harbage, yes. Thank you. Sorry. Would nuclear, if assuming we do something with small scale nuclear reactors and whatever, looking forward, would they be covered under MISFA, whatever. I'm going to get that right.
I think it was
Montana
Harbage.
Facilities Siting Act.
Senator McNally, Chair Ankeny, this is Rebecca Harbage with DEQ. And currently, as written, House Bill 273 removes nuclear facilities from the Major Facility Siting Act completely. In repealing Part 12 of 7520 MCA and removing the reference to Part 12 in the definition in 7520-104, nuclear facilities would no longer be defined as a facility that requires review under the Major Facility Siting Act.
Follow up. So that, Ms. Harbage, that does not mean they wouldn't have any environmental oversight, but they would not have as comprehensive review. Is that correct?
Chair Ankeny and Senator McNally, that's correct. There are certain environmental requirements that are included in the Major Facility Siting Act that may not be included in other permits under the Department of Environmental Quality. Some of these include a requirement under MFSA that DEQ require facilities to minimize their adverse environmental impacts. Not all other permits that go through the Montana Environmental Policy Act require the minimization of environmental impacts. Another requirement would be just the involvement of the public in the siting of such facilities. That is specific to the Major Facility Siting Act. DEQ may condition its certificate on modification of the location of a proposed facility under MFSA. In addition, there is a requirement under the Major Facility Siting Act that DEQ may require reclamation bonds. So DEQ is allowed to require an applicant to post bonds that guarantee successful reclamation and revegetation of the project area. That may or may not also be required by other environmental permits that would apply.
Okay. Thank you. And then just maybe two questions for the sponsor, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions for the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator.
Chair and Representative, so you know that we approved the joint resolution to do a study on some of the new technology. So I'm not here to talk about the technology, and that I think that was unanimous coming out of this committee. So why push this? Why not wait and see what comes out of that study?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's an excellent, excellent question. And to talk about process, the reason I did the bill the way I did it was because I don't want the bill hijacked. So I did a general appeal of the act. If I just did a general appeal of the components that were outdated, then you can plug and play and put anything in here you wanted to. I wanted to remove the act. And then to your next question, I know that the things that were removed, we're not going to build a nuclear power plant in the next 2 years. It's not going to happen in the next 10 years if this passes. The study will definitely decide if this has been repealed, what new MIFSA considerations are going to be brought before us. You guys, the deliberative process, not me because I'm termed out, will decide how this looks. So I didn't rip it out to set up a situation where nuclear power could sneak in here without regulation. I did it because it was the cleanest way to get rid of what we had and allow us a blank slate, a tabula rasa to start again.
Mr. Chair and Representative, but it, in fact, it does rip it out. It rips out the safeguards and it rips out the cap. So to say that that wasn't your intent, that may not have been your intent, but that's what it does.
Mr. Chair, Senator, but yet you also heard the DEQ folks talk on the questions brought by Senator Gauthier. They are still covered. They can still do most of those things. The only confusion was on the MIFSA, but all that is facility siting. It would never affect anything that had to do with the environment.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think if you just heard the DEQ spokesperson, that's not quite right. But that aside, given that this is all just about not preventing nuclear power, this is just about preventing letting people have a voice in that decision. That's what that initiative did. Why do you think it's a good idea to take that away?
Mr. Chair, Senator, excellent. You guys are getting rid of my conclusion so I can speed this up. Just look at the testimony we received today. We heard about the Yellowstone caldera. We heard about where we're going to bury the waste. We heard about how it's going to take so much water. You should have seen the attacks that came against me, all of them based on technology 60 years ago that was when nuclear was designed. It has nothing to do with what this bill can provide for Montana. And so what happens with this bill in there now is you go through the entire process, and at the very end of that humongous expense, you then put it on the ballot. All you got to spend is $1 million, and you can make sure nuclear power is never built here. Look at the list of opponents against this bill. It's all the wind and solar folks. They only want wind and solar. At least that's the way it was in the House, and a lot of them are on the list today. And so that's why, if we allow this to go before the polls, a simple expenditure of money and falsehoods told can kill any options to work on stuff that's awesome.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we did not have a long line of renewable power proponents here. We had quite a few people who were very familiar with the original initiative. It wasn't about renewables back then. It was about people having a voice in deciding what the future power decisions might be, particularly major ones. So I think that's pretty misleading, in my opinion, that response. But I would still ask, if we do this right, what do you benefit? You're just taking away people's right to have a voice in this. And that was something they passed and wanted 40 years ago, and I don't think that's changed.
Mr. Chair, Senator, actually, if you look at the testimony, I wrote it down. What Mr. Mackin said was, and it's, I think you guys had that list. He didn't have a copy to give me. I think it was number 8 or 9. They just want wind and solar. That's what I was referring to. Plus, if you look, I mean, you guys are in the same energy committee I am, Ford Montana, the Montana Audubon. I mean, Mr. Ploger, these guys are consistently advocates of wind and solar only. That's what I meant. That's not being disingenuous. That's exactly what these folks are.
Well, but Mr. Chair, many other people were weighing in on this, too, for different reasons.
I was only referring to those.
Okay. I'm still waiting to understand why it makes sense to not hear those voices or let people vote and have a rigorous discussion. I mean, I think that's what we need. I think that's what we're going to get with the study bill. And meanwhile, this does take out all the standards and everything else along the way. So I guess that's not really a question. That's a statement. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? Quick one.
Mr. Chairman, question for Mr. Mackin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morgo.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mackin, this is a very short question just for the chairman. Do you only want wind and solar? I think that was something that was just stated.
No. In fact, I cut out of my testimony geothermal and what was the other one? Hydro. We've still got hydro that we can exploit. I was in on the talks, well, listened to mostly the talks on the Helena Valley Irrigation Project for adding a generation facility to our ditch company's pumps that deliver water into the Helena Valley. So, yeah, I'm open to anything. I want least cost. I want safe. I want low environmental degradation. If it meets those requirements, I'm good with it. But if you're talking, you know, high cost, big problems, long-term issues, I'm less interested.
Thank you, Mr. Mackin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further questions, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, excellent discussion. Thank you so much. Thank you for the proponents and opponents that showed up today. I'm sorry I didn't get a copy of that testimony that you guys all had, but I just wrote down what was said. So if I misquoted them, I apologize. Thank you, Chris. Or I'm sorry, Senator Pope. We'll take a look at that. So in wrapping up, I've already discussed a bunch of things. Just look at this room right here. What do we have, 10 folks? So that's 200,000 Montanans represented right here at this meeting. What did we just have? A very vigorous debate on the pros and cons of what we're trying to do here. Isn't that exactly what you're saying only happens in a citizens' initiative? No, that happens here. That's what just happened. So all I'm doing is trying to take this off the ballot initiative so that we can have this debate. And when all 150 of us are here discussing this in the next cycle, guess what? Every single Montanan is represented in this discussion. Every single Montanan of 2022 and 23 determine what this is, not the folks from 1978. And it will be based on technology that we have today, not what would cause the Yellowstone caldera to cause a problem and cause a crack and have nuclear power that sucks all the water out of the environment. This deliberative process is what we do. This is a republic, not a democracy. And it's through this process that you folks will determine exactly what we need. In testimony, we heard that some of the provisions were out of date. Yeah, 48 years ago, they definitely were. And so the repeal gets rid of things and makes it a clean slate, easy for you folks through the study bill to figure out exactly what we need and don't need in order to bring nuclear power to Montana. This bill is a repeal of I-80. I did it because I don't want the bill hijacked. I have to take the entire act out. You guys can determine what goes back in it. This is designed for us to develop what the next generation of nuclear power looks like. This is baseload power. This is carbon-free power. This is energy all day, all night, all year, no matter the temperature. That's what this brings. And we have locations on a giant KVW line where we could put these things up and down. And in this market in the West where everybody's busting dams and tearing out coal and going to just an intermittent power source, Montana could once again be one of the strongest energy exporters in the region, building these nuclear power plants anywhere we can along that KVW line and send it to the folks that need it. I think it's a great bill, and I thank you so much for a great discussion, and I ask for a due pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Skies. That closes the hearing on House Bill 273. We'll open on House Bill 475. Representative Skies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give me one second, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Energy Committee. My name is Derek Skies. That's S-K-E-E-S. Again, it's my honor to represent House District 11 in the beautiful southwest corner of Flathead County. And I bring for you today House Bill 475. This is an act revising the definition of eligible renewable resources to include existing hydroelectric resources. So basically, we're saying, like we've been saying for years, I've done this since 2011, or actually a different representative brought in 11, but I love the idea and I've done it ever since. Hydro is green power. That's all this bill does. And in the House, we thought it would be really cool to amend it and say hydro and nuclear is green power. That's what this bill is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll wait for questions and maybe to have a nice close.
Thank you. Are there proponents in the room? Any proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave England. I'm the Assistant Business Manager of Boilermakers Local 11, and we support this bill and urge you to support it as well.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lori Shaw. That's S-H-A-W for the record with Northwestern Energy. We have around 500 megawatts of capacity in our portfolio that is generated by hydroelectric dams. It is clean power. It is renewable power. And for those reasons, we support this bill.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Chairman, committee members, good afternoon. Dwight Rose, ROSE, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We do represent dam electricians. And so on their behalf, we do rise in support of House Bill 475. Altogether in the state of Montana, there is approximately 2,700 megawatts of generated power that is done by the dams. And not every one of them, I think, qualify under this bill. But if you look up in the mountains, which you can't see right now, but up in the mountains, there's a whole bunch of stored energy up there that can be put into the portfolio. That's one of the talking points for the green energy. This is about as clean as you can get. We urge a due pass on this. This is a good, clean bill, and let's get it going. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman Ankeny, members of the committee, Bill Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, from Big Fork. I'm here to support this bill. Up in the northwest Montana area where Representative Skies and I are from, we have hydro support all throughout our electrical grid there, from Bonneville, from Kerr Dam, Hungry Horse. It's a great source of electricity. It's very clean. We've spent a lot of money, maybe billions, in the Northwest dealing with the fish issue. That can be dealt with, but it's clean, renewable energy at its best. I would also point out to you that there's a project that I've heard about that you may be aware of called Gordon Butte Energy Park, and talking about a self-contained hydro pump system. I think it sounds like a great idea because, as I understand it, that can come online instantly for meeting peak demand, not just baseload demand. So that might be something to consider in the future by this committee and by the PSC. There's a lot of funding coming down from the federal government right now for this COVID thing. It's possible there could be a state and private partnership to get projects like that online and other projects. So I would support this bill.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Charles Robison. That's R-O-B-I-S-O-N. I represent the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association and our 25-member co-ops, and we have long believed that hydroelectric power is the original green energy, and therefore we support the bill and urge it to pass.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jackie McBroom. That's M-C-B-R-O-O-M. I'm the business manager for IBEW Local 233. You know, as Montanans, we're trying to get ahead of the energy sector, correct? This bill will absolutely carry us forward. And we ask and urge you to consider this bill and thank the fine representative for carrying it. So thank you, and please, again, once again, support this bill. It'll be good for all Montanans.
Thank you. Further proponents? Proponents online?
None, Mr. Chair.
Jackie?
There are none, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there opponents?
Hey, Mr. Chair, members in the committee, my name is Whitner Chase, spelled C-H-A-S-E. I'm with the Montana Conservation Voters. So I'm a little confused about what the intent of the bill is. On the one hand, the sponsor is trying to get an honest and accurate definition of what's considered renewable in here. But then he also adds in nuclear power, which is a consumptive energy source and does have a waste product, even with some of these smaller thorium reactors. It's not as much as you'd have with the older technology, but if the intent is to try and like make the definition like more correct, I think the bill needs a little bit more work. And really the intent behind the renewable energy standard was to spur this renewable energy development. And so I think also without revising the percentage of renewable energy required for utilities to purchase or generate through the renewable energy standard, I think this bill just has a little bit more work to be done on it. So thank you so much for your time. And I would ask to be excused. Unfortunately, I have a board meeting, and as crazy as it sounds, I would much rather be here the rest of the year.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
Further opponents?
Chairman Agnew and members of Senate Energy and Telecommunications, my name is Ruben Castren, that is C-A-S-T-R-E-N, and I'm here representing the Montana Public Interest Research Group. We oppose this bill today for two primary reasons. The one deals with why adding hydro into the renewable portfolio standard, it will essentially undermine the intent of the bill. We had a great hearing only 2 days ago about repealing the renewable energy standard entirely, and I passed out nice graphs. Unfortunately, I did not print them out for you again today. But the point that those graphs made is that after the renewable portfolio standard was enacted in 2005, we saw a significant increase in the nameplate capacity of power generated in Montana. That means that because we required the utility to install and to draw power from new renewable sources, we saw more power being produced in the state as a whole. Along with that came the investment in those new resources. If we were to include hydro and pre-existing, and as the renewable portfolio energy currently stands, some upgrades done to currently existing hydroelectric facilities count as renewable energy because they come along with new investment in the state. The way this bill is written, it would include pre-existing hydroelectric facilities, which are already there. We have seen very little increase in hydroelectric production nameplate capacity over the last 50 years, and so this wouldn't spur the type of investment that is encouraged under the renewable portfolio standard. Including this would completely fulfill that 15%. I'm sure that the representative from Northwest Energy could tell you closer, but I think it's somewhere 80-some percent would be filled. The other reason we oppose this is because, by definition, nuclear power is not renewable. Whether or not you support nuclear power, it is an extractive energy source. It takes a minute amount of uranium compared to the amount of coal, let's say, used in a similar sized facility. But this still is an extractive resource. It still is a finite resource. And so for those reasons, it is not counted as renewable and therefore should not be included in the renewable portfolio standard. So for those two reasons, I really encourage a no on this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further opponents? Seeing none, is there any online?
Mr. Chair, our first one is Mr. Gary Mattson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Gary Mattson, spelled M-A-T-S-O-N. I strongly oppose HB 475. The purpose of the renewable energy standard is to create new renewable energy resources. It is wrong to allow existing resources to be counted in this standard. I recognize that Northwestern's hydro generation resources are renewable, but also know that the utility's plans for new generation largely exclude significant contributions from renewable generation. At this time of rapidly increasing electrical demand, for example, as we're seeing in the electrification of vehicles, we need to do our part to encourage the diversification of electricity generation resources that will bring Montanans the most reliable and least expensive electricity. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, I have Connor Ploger.
Connor?
Good afternoon, Chairman Akme, members of the committee. My name is Connor Ploeger, spelled P as in Paul, L-O-E-G-E-R, and I am here on behalf of the Montana Environmental Information Center. MEIC stands opposed to House Bill 475 because we support the renewable energy standard, not the green energy standard. This bill would just muddy the waters and would lead to further confusion by including resources such as nuclear energy and the renewable portfolio standard, which is not a renewable source of energy. Further, by muddying the waters, it would functionally repeal the RPS and would ensure that Montana became the first state in the union to repeal their RPS. Therefore, I encourage this committee not to pass House Bill 475 for the reasons previously stated as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, I have Madison Hebner.
Madison.
Good afternoon again, Chair Inkney and members of the committee. My name is Madison Hebner, H-E-B-N-E-R, from Bozeman, Montana. And I'm here again on behalf of Ford Montana in opposition to House Bill 475. As we've already heard today, there are enough existing hydropower plants in the state of Montana that energy companies will no longer be incentivized to pursue new renewable projects. As an organization for and by young people, we believe that renewable energy is key to providing future generations with a healthy and livable environment. This bill will disincentivize renewable energy and the potential for a cleaner climate along with it. House Bill 475 threatens Montana's renewable energy future, and we ask you to oppose it and vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chair, our last one is Carmen Borschelt.
Carmen?
Hello, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Carmen Borschelt, that is B-O-R-C-H-E-L-T, here on behalf of Montana Audubon in opposition of House Bill 475. We have continuously opposed that idea that existing hydropower facilities should be included in our state's current renewable portfolio standard. The purpose of the standard is to provide an incentive for the production of new renewable resources such as wind, solar, and geothermal. That is why hydropower is not included in the original RPS set back in 2005. The RPS is not intended to promote hydropower because most of our hydropower potential has already been exhausted, and the state's needs to continue focusing efforts on developing new renewable resources. Encouraging new renewable energy development in our state brings more business opportunities, construction projects, great energy independence, and reduced impacts from future greenhouse gas emissions. If this bill passes, the renewable energy standard will be overwhelmed with credits derived from existing energy sources, limiting incentives to bring new renewable energy online. While hydropower is arguably a renewable resource, it also has many associated costs, such as high rates of evaporation, altered natural ecosystems, and alteration of natural stream flows and sedimentation processes. Further, the market for selling available energy to out-of-state purchasers from our renewable energy projects may be negatively impacted because states are trying to reach their own renewable portfolio standards. Our state needs to continue pursuing these new sources of renewable energy. And for these reasons, we ask you to consider voting no on this bill, a bad idea for Montana's energy future. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Further opponents?
No, Mr. Chair.
Informational witnesses in a room? Is there any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Energy and the folks that came today. Thank you so much. Excellent testimony. Excellent questions. You guys really dug right into this. Again, I apologize for being late. I sometimes the House goes a little bit longer than the Senate, and then you guys can give us a hard time, and we totally deserve it. We've brought this bill repeatedly. I've had Democrat governors veto this bill repeatedly. If we repeal the RPS, this is still a good bill because it labels in Montana that these two energy sources are considered green and would help us get the foot in the door to sell those to the folks over west that want only green. And so I think it's a damn good bill. I hope you guys appreciate it. Have a great day. Thank you so much. Want a yes vote. Oh, and Mr. Chair, as far as the people to carry these two bills, I would love to see if you guys do the nuclear repeal. I would love Senator Gauthier to carry that one if he would. And the other one I would love to ask Vice Chair Small if he would.
If you don't like me?
You can carry either one you want at first. You bet. You bet. I didn't want to. Sorry, Senator. I think somehow you'd work against me on that
thank
one.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You guys have a great day.
That would have been my choice, too.
Thanks, folks.
All right, last but not least, Senator Ankeny, would you open up on Senate Bill 86?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senator Duane Ankeny, Senate District 20. That takes in part of Custer, Rosebud, Treasure, Muscle Shell, and the greatest geographical area in Yellowstone County. Today I bring you a bill, an act generally revising the coal-fired generation remediation and retirement requirements, requiring that decommissioning requirements be included in a coal-fired generating unit remediation and retirement plan, establishing decommissioning requirements, revising the requirements for judicial review, requiring payment of certain decommissioning costs, establishing a coal-fired generation unit retirement grant program, providing for use of the grant program, and providing rulemaking authority requiring reporting to the governor and the legislature, and providing the definitions. Therefore, and what this would do, it would establish under the DEQ, they would have set up the rules for this. It would require the owners of Coalstrip 3 and 4, if they was going to retire before 2025, to come with a remediation plan that addresses, amongst other things, real estate, and would address the Coalstrip water supply that there's another bill in for right now, but due to one reporter out of Billings who I won't name has muddied that up so bad that people don't really understand what was going on. But that's what the bill does. So I'm just going to sit down and listen to everybody and reserve the right to close, Mr. Chairman.
All righty. Thank you. So can we get the proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Adam Haight, spelled H-A-I-G-H-T, representing the Montana AFL-CIO. We rise in support today of Senate Bill 86 and appreciate the sponsor for bringing it. Coal-related layoffs come at a steep cost, not just to the workers themselves, but also to the communities that depend on the salaries of those workers for their economic activity. Pensions, retiree health care benefits are also important resources channeled into these areas. Union-related benefits deliver more than $1 billion per year in pension payments and medical spending into coal-field communities each year. The tax revenues associated with coal production, wages, property values, and ancillary business activities are also important to the fiscal health of our state and local governments. And when the pillar of coal production falls out from under these economies, a cascade of problems result. And we don't have, at the national level, the systems and programs in place to adequately assist workers that are dislocated from the coal economy or the communities that have relied on the coal economy for generations. There are efforts during the Obama administration to help coal workers and economies transition, but not at the scale necessary and not targeted to Montana. And in 2016, more than 500 homes went up for sale in Gillette, Wyoming, and 10% of them were in foreclosure after the layoffs have left more than 1,000 people without incomes. The outcome in Coalstrip, once the units 3 and 4 are retired, will be drastically worse than the Gillette comparison. Currently, it is incredibly difficult to obtain a mortgage in Colstrip during the economic uncertainty facing the community. We've already had retirees that have had to walk away from their homes. And that means that future laid-off workers will have no choice other than to walk away from their homes without any return on investment. This will financially cripple these workers for the rest of their lives, and that's why we're standing here in support of this grant program. We also appreciate in the bill the language on page 5, lines 21 through 22, that will help provide certainty related to our members' pensions and benefits once closures take place. So we just really want to make sure, you know, you're probably going to hear from opponents that this is going to harm future investment into Montana. But we've seen bills already in this committee that there's a $1 billion pipeline, hydrogen pipeline that's interested in Montana. There's interest in carbon capture. There's also interest in small-scale nuclear. So I just don't really buy that this is going to absolutely kill future investment in the state of Montana. And I also ask that you don't make policies based on the hope that these out-of-state utilities will someday take our wind energy. We need to be doing what's best for Montana. So this is your chance to support Montanans that are standing on the precipice of serious financial harm simply because they took a job to provide energy to Montana and to the northwest of the United States. We have brought legislation over the past five sessions to address the concerns of our members in Colstrip to no avail. 2017 was probably the closest that we came to passing a substantial piece of legislation for Colstrip. But because of that, our only recourse has been to fight to keep these plants and jobs continuing as long as possible. So today, we strongly just urge a yes vote and to stand by Montana workers and the community. Thank you.
Next proponent.
Good afternoon, Chairman, committee members. Dwight Rose, ROSE, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 44. I've heard people ask in the past, why is there so many Colstrip bills? Never really thought much about it, but yesterday I was asked by Representative Binkley what I thought was going to happen to the workers out in Colstrip. And as I'm answering her, it's dawning on me. There's so many bills because there's an uncertain future. Is it going to be 4 years? Are they going to be there for 14 years? Are they going to be there for 20 years? There's a trio of legislation right now, SJ3, SJ10, and House Bill 273 that could help secure a future to Colstrip. I don't think any of these bills are necessarily designed to inflict punitive damages on the principal owners of Colstrip 3 and 4. I think they just want to get them to come together and come up with a plan for what's going to happen with Colstrip. The facility is there. There's some technology that could come up that could keep Colstrip generating baseload energy for generations of Montanans and the nation. This is something that's kind of important to Colstrip. This is important to Montana. And it's just one of those things where I think if everyone kind of comes together, this would settle the issues of what's going to happen in Colstrip. An analogy that was brought up yesterday, and it'll probably come back to haunt me here in a little bit, but if everyone comes together in the sandbox and plays nicely, figures it out, I think we can figure out a future for Colstrip. So we urge a due pass on Senate Bill 86. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Stacey Yates, S-T-A-C-E-Y-Y-A-T-E-S. I'm here today in support of this bill. And you've got to bear with me a little bit. I was a high school football coach for quite a while. And I used to tell my players, I'd tell them to go home and visualize. Visualize your fundamentals. Visualize your footwork. And I'm asking you as committee members to visualize what it would be like right now to live in Colstrip, Montana. And you got a mortgage, you're going to lose your job potentially. The amount of uncertainty that's there right now, I just want you guys to really, really think about it, and I think this is a good bill, and I urge your support on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Vice Chair Smalls, members of the committee, my name is Mick Wonnacott, W-O-N-N-A-C-O-T-T, here today representing the members of Labor's Local Union 1686, and we stand in support of SB 86 with everything that's already been said. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave England. That's E-N-G-L-U-N-D. I'm the assistant business manager with Boilermakers Local 11. And while we support or we represent Boilermakers across the state of Montana, a significant number of our members live in Colstrip area, and we feel this bill would be beneficial to them. So please support this.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Johnson, J-O-H-N, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. I'm a business agent with the Operating Engineers, and we represent roughly 300 workers over there at Colstrip. So we're in support of this SB 86 with everything else that everyone else has stated out there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Luke Hoffer. That's H-O-F-F. ER. I'm with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I agree with the other testimonies that have been said, and we ask that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bill Myers from Big Fork, three times in one day after 10 years of not being here in this committee. I feel strongly that we need to support the community of Colstrip. It may surprise some people that heard my earlier testimony on 273, but I do support coal, and I support keeping 3 and 4 open. I also support remediation. As a child, most of us grew up with a very simple lesson that our parents gave us. Whether it was spilling orange juice or spilling milk, clean up your mess. Clean up your mess. If you didn't hear that as a child, I don't know what you were missing. But, I mean, I heard it a lot when I'd spill a little orange juice or milk. It wasn't for Mom to clean up. It was for me to clean up. And I would urge these utilities from the West Coast that now are looking at backing out after 38 or 40 years of our state providing them coal and reliable electricity, they need to clean up their mess. They need to clean it up for the good of the community, the water table. I've heard reports that there was some test well maybe a mile deeper or deeper, and people's water on the local level at the shallow wells are polluted from what's happened over there. So I think we, even in northwest Montana, are very well aware that there's a community there, and many people are suffering, and I want to see that pollution corrected. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next proponent.
Chairman Smalls, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jackie McBroom. That's M-C-B-R-O-O-M. I am the business manager for Local 233, and I speak for a lot of electricians and family members, and I would like to speak on behalf for the people of Colstrip. This is the right thing to do, and thank you, Senator, for carrying this bill. It's very important that, you know, as leaders of our communities, that we show leadership by helping these people out. I don't know how else to say it because I'm very emotional about this. I have friends that live in Colstrip, and I ask you to urgently, you know, to really look at this bill and consider it. You're talking about a lot of families' lives, and we don't know what's going to happen with them, but this will help protect them. So please, please vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Ryan Casterline, C-A-S-T-E-R-L-I-N-E. I'm a member of IBEW 1638, also a control room operator at the plant. I also own a home in Colstrip, and like a few others have stated, I just urge a yes on this, and thank you, Mr. Ankeny, for this bill.
All right, thank you. Next proponent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bob Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T. I'm here today on behalf of the city of Colstrip, whose future depends on what we do in the upcoming years. The city was built on coal and coal-fired generation, with the expectations of it lasting for a long time. sadly, due to a lot of politics taking place on an area that I won't mention, those things have changed. And the city now is left in a position where the homeowners, the people that have worked to build these mines, to build the generator plants, to operate them, are going to be left in a real bind, like we say in the oil patch, a nine-line bind, which is about as bad as you can get. And they need to have some assurance and some relief that things will be taken care of. And that not only includes the water, but it includes losing your job and losing then your home because you can't pay for it, having to move somewhere else. Not any of their faults. It was some decisions made at other levels that caused this stuff. And that needs to be remedied. If you cause a problem, you're responsible for it, and you need to rectify it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent. Okay, no more proponents in the room. Do we have proponents on Zoom?
Mr. Chair, we have Jim Atchison.
Okay, Mr. Atchison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Atchison. That's spelled H-E-C-H-I-S-O-N. I'm the executive director of Southeastern Montana Development, based here in Colstrip, but it's important to note that we are a regional nonprofit economic development group that does whatever we can to create economic activity within the four counties of Custer, Rosebud, Powder River, and Treasure. Our organization's been around since 97. I've been here going on 20 years. And as an economic development professional, I certainly stand in strong support of SB 86 for a couple reasons. Number one, housing values are certainly a concern in this community. Currently, there's 8 pending sales on homes in this community. Unfortunately, this week we lost one of those sales due to the media coverage on possible water issues in this community, as Senate Bill 87 noted earlier in the week. Real estate professionals have said in the last 5 years in Colstrip that home values have dropped a minimum of 20%. And that probably includes some of the commercial properties for small businesses as well. Number two, future water supply is also a concern. This includes not only the access and affordability, but also for the residents and the small businesses that already are here and those that may be potentially moving into Colstrip. These concerns impact not only the workforce that's here, but also potential workforce that is possibly moving in to replace some of the retirees. This includes small business community as well. So in closing, I hope Senate Bill 86 would address these concerns, provide a solution, and reduce the stress level and uncertainty for this community. That's why I support Senate Bill 86, and I ask that you do as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just double check. Do we have another proponent on Zoom?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no further proponents, can we get opponents in the room, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jenny Chambers. I am the administrator of the Waste Management and Remediation Division at the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here today in reluctant opposition in Senate Bill 86. The department recognizes the significant impacts closure of Colstrip coal-fired generation facilities will have on the community and families of Colstrip. We will continue in our role of ensuring the legally responsible requirements are being done for cleanup in Colstrip and work to mitigate negative economic impacts to the community as appropriate. Our opposition stems from 2 significant implementation issues in this bill. The first, the bill expands the agency's scope of activities under the Coal-Fired Generating Unit Remediation Act, and several of those requirements fall outside the scope of the Department of Environmental Quality's expertise and scope of our mission. Second, the uncertainty in fiscal impacts and ability to be able to account for and determine the financial impacts, collect the grant funds, and then fairly administer the grant programs as required in the bill. So the issues are related to implementation of this bill the way it's structured. The Coal-Fired Generation Unit Remediation Act was enacted in 2017 legislation session and was sponsored by Senator Ankeny. DEQ supported that bill. It ensured that appropriate remedies are in place when a coal-fired generating unit is retired to ensure the protection of environmental life support systems from degradation. With the closures of Unit 1 and 2 in January of 2020, a remediation plan was jointly submitted by the owners and approved by DEQ. The remediation plan provides information pertaining to remediation and demolition of the generating units. This includes disposal and remediation and regulatory requirements of universal waste, asbestos, petroleum releases, and other solid and hazardous waste. The plan also included ash pond remediation by reference of documents submitted and already regulated under the existing administrative order on consent. Senate Bill 86 proposes to expand the scope of the Remediation Act to add a decommissioning requirements to mitigate the economic effects of the retirement on the community. The department must review these additional requirements, including the owner's cost of the decommissioning requirements, which include a loss of value of residential and commercial property, the description of owner's plans to address employee rights, benefits, and pensions of the union employees and other community members, and transfer of water rights and related infrastructure to the local government. The department must then compile the information for an overall financial impacts, receive those funds from the owners to develop a grant program for those impacted, and this type of analysis, evaluation, and scope fall outside of DEQ environmental qualities, expertise, and additional resources would be needed. As provided in the fiscal note, the department estimates we would need $250,000 in operating expenses to hire and pay for consultants to help us evaluate the estimated loss of value of residential commercial property and determine the other economic impacts associated with this rule, this bill, in addition to grant application submittal of rule program. DEQ does not have adequate resources to determine how much revenue would be needed long term. So the $250,000 would be only to get us up to figure out the evaluation and develop the rule program to administer the grants. Then, once that's determined, we don't know how many resources would be needed, what revenue would be generated, and the necessary appropriation to manage the program long term. DEQ has and will consistently involve the community throughout the process of remediation of the coal ash ponds, and we are committed to engaging and supporting the local community in the future. Thank you, and we do request that you don't advance this bill and available for any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, Mark Baker. I'm a Helena attorney. I represent Puget Sound Energy. Puget is a 50% owner in 1 and 2 that are being decommissioned and remediated, 25% owner in 3 and 4. Puget Sound Energy has provided $10 million in community transition funding to the community of Colstrip. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today on Senate Bill 86. I know the sponsor is trying to do everything he can to help his constituents. Senator Ankeny, as we all know, is tenacious. We have seen a number of Colstrip bills, not only this session, but in previous sessions, many of those bills at the expense of my client. But I think this bill presents some serious issues, both in the way it's drafted and as a policy consideration for the state of Montana. So I actually want to call your attention to the bill itself. First, I think the heart of the bill is really in the definition section. So if you look at page 3 of the bill, the language at the bottom of page 3, it talks about decommissioning requirements on 25 and 26. But then on 27 and 28, it adds as those requirements, and really when we're saying decommissioning requirements, we're talking about decommissioning costs. That term also means the estimated loss of value of a residential or commercial property attendant to a coal-fired generation unit. I would say that this is a significant new and unknown and unexpected liability that frankly just makes the plant even more challenging economically at a time when we're trying to keep the plant as competitive as possible. And then if you continue with the language on page 4, and I probably have more questions than answers here, but as I read the bill, it talks about what that loss of value is based on. So lines 1 through 10 on page 4, four different criteria. The owner of the property has to execute a sale of the property between July 1 of 2020 and July 1 of 2025. There's a five-year window. Second, the outstanding liability associated with the property based on the original liability or loan exceeding its fair market value. So that would suggest that the property would be underwater, so to speak. Third, the owner being subjected to a price reduction due to the retirement or pending retirement of a coal-fired unit. And four, the sale, not including a transfer from borrowers to lenders that takes place as part of a foreclosure process. I actually think Section 4 and Section 1 are a little contradictory unless we're talking about a foreclosure process where the bank actually takes ownership, and then it's the bank that is executing the sale of the property contingent to lines 1 and 2, qualification 1. So how does this work? Wouldn't this legislation encourage property owners to leverage their property as much as possible, knowing that they would be made whole by a third party? Doesn't it penalize good behavior? Let's look at an example. Two individuals side by side, they buy a home, say in 2010, for $150,000 each. Homeowner A decides to accelerate the payments on that home and pays off that home. They have that home free and clear. Homeowner B pays the minimum mortgage payment for several years. Both go to sell that property. The property's only worth $120,000 now, both properties. Homeowner A sells that property, gets $120,000. Remember, that property owner paid off their mortgage. Property B, their homeowner mortgage is higher than the $120,000 they still have in terms of value of the property. So they sell their house for $120,000, but as I understand the effect of this bill, they would then have the difference between their original mortgage of $150,000 and the $120,000 that they received from the sale. They're going to get that $30,000 benefit. Homeowner A gets $120,000, paid off his property. Homeowner B did not pay off their property, ultimately gets $150,000. Is that the kind of policy we really want to encourage in the state of Montana? Furthermore, the value of the property might be impacted by a number of considerations. The maintenance of and the upkeep of the home or the property, weather-related events, the state of the economy generally, interest rates. So while Senate Bill 86 suggests that the reduction must be due to a retirement, remember in factor three, again on page four, lines 5 through 6, the owner being subjected to a price reduction due to the retirement or pending retirement. If a reduction is based or a result of some other factor, isn't the homeowner always going to claim that it was due to the retirement or pending retirement of a unit? Keep in mind there are two units that are already retired. And I think most would suggest that certainly over the next 20 years, the other two units will probably be retired as well. Again, are these the kind of policies we really want to encourage? You know, we've had a lot of economic change in our state in the last 100 years. You just look around this committee room, and you know in your individual communities, in Libby and Eureka and Kalispell, the timber industry, the impacts there, the aluminum plant in Columbia Falls, the Asarco plant in East Helena, railroad industry across the High Line and what it's brought to the state. But Montanans are a resilient bunch. We're an independent bunch, and we're able to take responsibility for ourselves. We've done it in each of those places I've mentioned. And we'll do it in Colstrip, too. For the interest of time, I know the committee hearing is running late. I would just encourage the committee to look seriously at the bill, the implications of the bill, and encourage a do-not-pass in Senate Bill 86. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Ebzery, E-B-Z-E-R-Y. I'm an attorney in Billings, and I'm here on behalf of Avista and Portland General Electric. Avista has a 15% interest in Colstrip 3 and 4. Portland General Electric has a 20% interest in those same units. Avista is also the owner of the largest private dam hydroelectric facility in Sanders County. I've represented both of these companies since 1993, and they are pleased to be part of the Colstrip community and plan to be so. PGE and Avista oppose 86 for a number of reasons, which I'll spell out. I do want to remind, and I think Ms. Chambers did, what happened in 2017, Senate Bill 339. was put together after introduction by Senator Ankeny, turned into a very valuable product. I think it was one of the few bills that passed unanimously or close to it during that session, and I think that is going to be a guide for all the owners in the future. It has already been used when Puget Sound Energy and Talon closed Colstrip 1 and 2 a year ago, and I think it's, from what I'm told, that it is working as prescribed in the law. However, I think this bill attempts to modify planning requirements by adding new unworkable and, we think, punitive provisions. House Bill 86 would create a grant program, which you have heard about, which would be ceded by the co-owners from the estimated loss of value from the local residential and commercial property. That would be in Section 5.4B. We oppose any such provisions. We do not believe that the owners of the industrial facilities, coal-fired generating facilities, or other kind of industry should be legislatively required to pay for such things as loss of real estate and outstanding liability. We believe that our significant contribution to the economy of Montana over the past 40 years through payment of taxes, coal severance, property generation, and wholesale energy transaction, and through the creation of family wage union jobs at the plant in the Rosebud Mine, needs to be considered before requiring plant owners to commit what amounts to an exit fee. In addition to the punitive nature of the bill, we have some technical critiques of the bill. Number one, how will the Department of Environmental Quality measure loss of property value? Does this put the state's environmental regulator in the real estate business? Senate Bill 86 also adds requirements to remediation plans to address employee rights, benefits, of pensions of union salaried, and other officials affected by the retirement of the union. Of the unit. These kinds of issues are matters that should belong in existing contracts and agreements, not issues in an environmental remediation plan. PGE and Avista are proud to have been part of the landscape and Colstrip for the past 40 years, and we would urge that this not be a vehicle to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Ankeny. I'm Charles Deneau, D-E-N-O-W-H, here on behalf of Rocky Mountain Power. Rocky Mountain Power is a 10% owner in Units 3 and 4. We've also got a wind facility at Pryor Mountain near Red Lodge. We really like doing business in Montana. Over the years, we've contributed a lot to the economy. We've created jobs, we paid a lot of taxes, and we're interested in other investments in the state. But we think this bill sets a bad precedent and sends a negative message to those looking to do business in Montana. So for those reasons, we urge you to table the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. I'm an attorney here in Helena representing Talon, Montana today. Talon, Montana is a 30% owner in Unit 3. We're also the operator of Colstrip. I can certainly appreciate the passion and desire of the sponsor to protect his community. Having grown up in a rural Montana town, my heart certainly goes out to his efforts. Talon desires, and we're on record as wanting to be one of those owners that is around for the long haul. We want to both be an owner and operator of coal strips so long as it's economically viable to do so. The Northwestern Energy put that date out to 2042 in its rate case that they filed. Again, Talon wants to be a part of Colstrip's future. The challenge with all due respect to the sponsor's efforts in Senate Bill 86 is our desire to make investments in the plant and its future operations is really inconsistent with what is going on within the substance of the bill. Most notably, if this bill were to pass, we would have to set aside or looking to set aside costs associated with the decommissioning aspects associated with the bill. Again, we would rather take our resources and put them into plants and seeing how long we can keep Colstrip operational. Certainly respect the sponsor, but we think Senate Bill 86 is going in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Trenk, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here today on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association. We rise in opposition to Senate Bill 86, most specifically with regard to the section that speaks to the grant program to reimburse homeowners and business owners. We very much appreciate Senator Agnew's efforts to look out for his constituents and his community. And like many in this room, we hope to see Colstrip 3 and 4 operating for a very long time, and we will continue to advocate to see that happen. Opposing one of Senator Ankeny's bills, particularly a Colstrip bill, is not something we do lightly. And it's also, I've got members on both sides of this issue, and that's also not always a fun place to be. But we stand before you today simply for the fact that if we're going to put new policies in place, particularly with the grant program for the homeowners, we want to make sure we understand how they're going to work, what they're going to cost, because if it's going to happen, we want it to be successful, and I'm not sure this bill sets that up to be that way. Senate Bill 86 is wandering in some very challenging territory, by attempting to provide grants to cover the loss of fair market value for homeowners and businesses that can be directly attributed to plant closures. Before going to work with Treasure State, I spent 14 years with the Montana Association of Realtors. And through that time, we saw the housing bubble burst. And there were homeowners all across the state that were underwater. Foreclosure counselors were brought in. It's not a pretty time, and you got to have incredible empathy for people whose greatest asset is their home, and they're looking at some very difficult decisions. But what is proposed here today isn't simple. To carry out this program equitably, determining fair market value is going to require expertise in appraisals to make sure that grants are awarded under consistent guidelines. Appraisals, as others have mentioned, involve many factors, comparable sales, which could be a challenge in that community, age, upkeep, even location in the neighborhood. And this is going to be, it could very well be an expensive, very intensive process to keep up with the market changes over a five-year cycle. And I don't think the Montana DEQ, for whom I have great respect, is the right entity to lead this kind of an undertaking. That's just not in their wheelhouse. And second, one of the things we learned earlier with the housing crisis was sometimes well-intentioned effort even has consequences that we didn't expect. One of those consequences that folks learned and were surprised about when they were getting some of the help for the earlier crisis was potentially, in this case, grants to homeowners and businesses are taxable. You could be foreclosed, or you could take a short sale, get out better than a foreclosure, and find out you're going to have to pay taxes on what that mortgage folks wrote down. And I only bring that up in the sense that folks are going to have some decisions to make, tough financial decisions, and they're going to need good advice and to make the right choices for their financial situation. And again, I'm not sure DEQ is equipped to stand up a program that's going to provide those kind of resources. One of the things that's missing in Senate Bill 86 is more direction to tap into market solutions and some of the tools and experiences that we did learn from the earlier housing crash. There's more on the table, perhaps, than just grants. And certainly nothing in this bill prevents anybody from exploring those. But we certainly, if we're going to do this, we encourage a much more comprehensive approach to helping home and business owners plan ahead and bring the right expertise to the table. And again, this is just not in the wheelhouse of the Montana DEQ. We just don't think it's going to be successful as envisioned under this bill, and for that reason, we ask for a do not pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent. Okay, seeing no more opponents in the room, can we get our first opponent on Zoom, please?
Mr. Chair, I have Ms. Ann Hedges.
Ms. Hedges, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ann Hedges with the Montana Environmental Information Center, and I nearly support this bill. Maybe Senator Rankney doesn't want to hear that because it doesn't help his cause, but he's getting closer. But the problem is we've been having this debate, this exact debate, in fact, since 2015, and yet we're no closer to solving this problem. We haven't taken the time that we need to figure out how it is that we help the folks in Colstrip, because every one of them had a legitimate concern. Of course they're concerned about their home values. Of course they're concerned about what the future holds. And nobody is telling them what is going to happen. And I can't imagine being in that situation. I think it's terrible. But I just want to say something. We agreed with the owners of Colstrip to settle a lawsuit in 2016 that said that units 1 and 2 had to close in July of 2022. If they had abided by that agreement, those two units would still be operating. They are not operating because Talon put out plenty of information in a press release saying they were uneconomic to continue to operate. That's what we just heard from Talon again today. I believe that the quote was, Talon wants to be around so long as it's economic to do so. Those should be words that concern everybody. Because what we don't know is how much longer it's going to be economic. We've seen a lot of figures. We've seen a lot of owners trying to get out. We've seen a lot of utility commissions in other states really rigorously analyzing the economics of this plant. There's a reason all the workers are worried is because these last two units are going to suffer a very similar fate in all likelihood as units 1 and 2. They are going to close before anybody expects. The economics of this plant is just simply too overwhelming. We should have had this conversation years ago about how do we help the workers of this town. I think that this bill has a lot to recommend it. First off, I think there should be a decommissioning obligation on the part of the owners. I think that there's some really great language in here. I think DEQ should not just do remediation, but I think they should oversee some decommissioning at the plant. I think that every owner should do what Puget and Avista have done, which is pony up some money for worker transition. Puget Sound Energy gave $10 million. Avista has given $3 million, but we haven't seen any money from any of the other owners. That is money that could go to things like we're talking about here today. I also think that a grant program is a great idea, but I think there should be some qualifiers on it about how much money people can get out. But I also think that we have the stimulus money from the federal government right now. Are we going to be punishing the owners who have helped these people pay for their houses for decades? Or are we going to say we need to find another way to help the workers move through this difficult time and try to get additional economic development in that area, whether it's nuclear or whether it's something else? But we do have an obligation as a state to help these workers and to have a plan forward, regardless of whether the owners will tell us a closure date or not. We know that their closure dates can come upon us very quickly and unexpectedly. We need to be ready for that. And I think the thing to do is to sit down and start having that conversation about how do we go forward and whether we can use any of the stimulus money for some of these things to help the workers and the people who live out there create a little bit more certainty about their future. So with that, I think Senator Ankeny finally has an idea that's getting closer, but it's still not quite there. And so we have to oppose it because the money shouldn't be coming from the owners per se for this much of a cost of their the property values, but I do think that the workers deserve some financial relief. And we have a lot of money for, in the stimulus package. I think that some of that should be going in that direction. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have Mr. Mattson?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I am Gary Mattson, and still spelled M-A-T-S-O-N. I live in Milltown, Montana, and I'm a retired small businessman. I strongly oppose SB 86. It's just wrong to punish the owners of Colstrip generators by making them pay costs to local residents and businesses that are caused by circumstances beyond the owner's control. Success in financial endeavors of all kinds is never guaranteed. The closure or failure of these endeavors is always accompanied by highly regrettable community losses. This reality of the relationship between financial enterprises and communities has been and always will be with us. Instead of punishing owners, it is the proper role of government to aggressively seek means by which financial impacts upon communities can be mitigated. One example of such mitigation would be the recruitment of new enterprises to replace those that are lost. Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you. And that concludes our opponents. Do we have any informational witnesses in the room? Do we have one on Zoom?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, questions from the committee? I know somebody wants to swing at the ball here. Questions? All right, seeing no questions, Senator Ankeny, would you care to close on your bill?
Mr. Vice Chair, thank you, committee, for a good hearing. I'm just going to start off with who looks out for these workers. It don't appear that the companies, I'm going to restate that, Puget Sound Energy has come to Colstrip and has given them $10 million for this transition. Avista has not. I mean, it's been stated in two different hearings, both the water hearing and this hearing, by MEIC that Avista has come up with money. Avista hasn't come up with any money. But who's going to look out for these workers? Let me tell you something about these workers. The guys that wear the Carhartts, the guys that shovel and clean up the coal and keep the plant running, keep the mine running. They came up here, not sponsored by the companies in any way, come up here on their own dimes, used their own vacations in 1987, and lobbied this legislature to lower the severance tax from 30% to 15%. I was one of those guys. And we got it done. We've saved those plant owners over $100 million in severance tax that would more than pay for what we're talking about. We're not talking about just write a check out to everybody. We're talking about those people that's going to lose their homes or they're going to have to leave because they got mortgages. This ain't Bozeman, this ain't Missoula, it ain't Great Falls, it ain't Helena. Them plants shut down, there isn't another job. You're going to have to travel. Jason, Vice Chair, knows about traveling. You're not going to, you don't have a market for your home. You know, God bless our local economic development guy. He's working, I would say, 16 hours a day with different proposals. People want to do the ash, do this, do that, but they all want money. They all want some kind of grant. They all want this or that. There's nobody that's come in and signed on a dotted line, say, I'm going to provide 250 jobs for this ash removal, or we're going to process it. And again, I'm going to say that we've more than paid for what I'm asking. And like I said, we paid for it. We maxed out our credit cards. We stayed five guys in a room down here by the tracks while we was lobbying that bill. I mean, I don't know how many times we'd bail in that car at 9 o'clock at night and come up here because the hearing was early the next morning. We made every hearing on that severance tax bill. We wanted 5%. But Montana Power and Governor Schwinden got together and decided 15% was probably as low as we should go. And we was happy with that. But we saved that much money. Figure it out. Take 15%, just average it out. $18 a ton for coal over, since 1987. Well over $100 million. We saved those companies without a one thank you. We didn't want a thank you. We had our jobs. We had our homes. And now that, I mean, we're pretty much resolved to the fact that at some point, 3 and 4 is going to close. 1 and 2 already has closed. And what we're saying is, when it does, these people that stuck with houses there, because you got to have some kind of incentive for people like Stacy Yates and other people that live in Colstrip. If we're going to keep those plants running, we got to have a skilled workforce. They got to know that when they do, when the end does come and it's time to leave, a lot of these guys like instrument techs, electricians, a lot of the people at the mine, they're not going to be involved in that remediation. They're not operators. They're going to have to travel. They're going to have to leave their homes. But if by some miracle Colstrip is turned into the new Sun City of the southeast Montana and people flood in there to buy retirement homes, we don't need this bill. The homes are sold. Everybody's made whole. This is probably less money than any bill I've come up with. This is just making people whole. And like I say, we've already paid for it. The Carhartt-wearing workers of Colstrip paid for this bill in 1987. The DEQ don't like it because they got to get outside their lane. Tough. We all do it. We all suck it up and do what we got to do to get the work done. Remediation's part of that. So this naturally fit that this would be under the remediation. If they got to hire consultants or do something, do whatever they got to do. But suck it up. Do your job. We do. You do it wherever you work. You did. You did. You did. We all did. You can't just sit there and be real comfortable in your little cube and everything's all right. Oh, they want me to do something different? No, I can't do that. Suck it up. And do what you got to do and get it done. That's what the workers at Colstrip are doing. They don't know how darn long their jobs are going to last, but they're sucking it up. The other thing, the power plants received the highest award for safety that any company can get. It's something, a star award or something. Just their savings on workman's comp would pay for this bill. We're not talking about hundreds of millions here. The workers have earned the right to make sure when the time comes that they got to leave Colstrip, that they're not going to be underwater on their mortgages, that their pensions are going to be whole. They've earned that. You heard them say, well, we've given good jobs all this time. We've earned those good jobs because it was a highly skilled workforce like no other. Well, I ain't going to say no other in Montana, because Montana has good workers. I just talked to my grandson's fraternity the other night. Wanted me to speak about how you get a good job or what do you do when you talk to an employer. I said, well, number one, if you're from Montana, you got a leg up. You guys from California, Washington, Oregon, you better study your roommate because you need some work. But above all, have a good work ethic and be honest. And that's what I'm asking out of these companies. Be honest. In all the people that were opponents to this bill, how many of them had put people to work? Created jobs. You know? Yeah, I'm passionate. Colstrip has provided me with a very good living. I never cussed the company I worked for because I always figured I had my option in the parking lot. I didn't like the guy that was writing that check, I could go home. So I'm asking to pass this bill. Pass this bill because the workers have paid for this bill in more ways than one. Not just through their being on time and being safe, but actually in dollars. When they come up here and lobbied that severance tax, they paid for this bill. When they went to work and worked safely and got lower rates, they paid for this bill. So I'd urge you, do pass. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator Ankeny, and that concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 86. Well, that was a good day, everybody. It's 5:45. We're not going to do executive action, so that concludes our meeting day. Meeting adjourned.